Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
We're in Yeshayahu chapter 9. Let's start again from the beginning. We talked about it, that there are those chapters where the prophecy that refers to future events was difficult to know exactly what it referred to, meaning that they knew what it referred to, but since we've used the words and the words explain things, they're not so specific, so different opinions arise as to which events they refer to. But it makes the by using these words, or the type of words, it becomes much more real. It becomes much more shocking, or much more... So he says like this, Ha'am ahokim b'choshech, the people who were going in darkness. He's referring to the people of Yehuda, and this is who he was saying prophecy to. And the people were saw darkness. They were a small country, and there was a superpower that was trying to overrun them. And they had enemies. They had the civil war where the 10 tribes had split off, and they were an enemy, and then they had other enemies. And the people didn't see how a small country in the Middle East could survive. And there was a lot of darkness. There were the bad days, so to speak. A bad day is described as dark. It's a... In fact, one of the interesting things is we have a mitzvah on Shabbos to have light, to light the Shabbos candles, or to have light in the room, because when things are dark, it's depressing. It's just sitting in the dark. It's just like something about having sunlight. That so the people were going in darkness. They didn't see how things would turn out well. They weren't sure what would become of them. They were worried about themselves and their future. So these people that are going in darkness, they just, wherever they go, they see darkness. Ra'u or gadol. They are going to see the big light. All of a sudden, it's going to be clear. They are going to Yoshve or Tzamavis. And then he repeats it with a few different words. People that are living in the shadow of death. So these are the people that are in darkness. They felt that the country would be destroyed. They would be destroyed. Or Naga Alehem. They're going to see a light, a great light, a happy light. One of the things we say in Havdalah is from the Megillas Esther, Laihudim Haisa Ora, to the Jews there was light, Simchas Dasan Vikar. When things are dark, it means like a person feels like they're stumbling, they don't know how they're going to get out, they don't see things. And light is a happiness, like a person sees, they can see all of a sudden, they understand it, they know where they're going. Verse 2. Habesha HaGoy. We talked about this last week, that the word Goy here doesn't mean the Jewish people, this nation. In other words, we always say Goy. Goy alone doesn't mean something bad. When you say Goyim, like in a negative way, you mean the nations. Oh, that Goy, sicker like a Goy. But the word Goy itself just means a nation. So here it refers to Jewish people. Habesha HaGoy. You have lifted up, you have greatened this nation. His lo higatla simcha. To this nation you have made very great joy. Sometimes when things are really bad and there's a turnaround, the joy is even greater. It's like the bounce theory, like you bounce, you know, when things are really bad and then all of a sudden they turn around, the person's joy knows no ends, because they knew how far down they were. They knew how worried they were. Samko lefanecha kesimcha bekatzir. This is like the joy of the harvest. The harvest is a lot of ups and downs. There's a lot of planting and plowing and a lot of worries about frost and about not enough rain. But when you finally get there and you harvest, then there's really joy. So this joy that Yehuda would experience, the kingdom of Yehuda would be like the harvest. And then kashi agil b'chalkum shalal, or when you it's like payday, people are happy on payday when they divide up the booty. When they when people get to, it's a lot of fun. Like, you know, people, they get their share and they're dividing their riches. And you take this and I'll take this, and like everybody's very happy. So he's trying to, again, so he's painting a picture that the people were in darkness and in the shadow of death, and they're going to see a great light, and they'll be magnified and they'll be rejoiced. And it'll be like a harvest rejoicing, and it'll be like splitting the booty, like you hit the jackpot. I think that's the word they use there. I don't know where that word jackpot comes from, but it means that people are happy if they ever hit the jackpot. Ki es ol sivlo. Now, what are they going to do about all the worries they had about the yoke of the superpowers that were abusing them? The yoke of these nations. That's Mateo and the stick which they used to use to hit them and to shevet hanogis bochitis hachitosa, you will have broken it. In other words, the nations that had caused us trouble, Hashem would break their rod. You know, their rod was what they used to lord over us. So their authority over us and their abuse would be broken. Similar to what happened in Midian. Midian was the earlier victory that we had in the time of Gideon, also where there was a superpower that had been come against us, and things looked very worrisome, and we didn't see how we would overcome it. And he's predicting the downfall of Assyria. 4. Ki koson tzaon. He says here that it's a translation here is a little difficult because of the wording. Usually, in order to win a victory, it would have taken a lot of soldiers, a lot of fighting to win. Now, we could not imagine defeating the multitudes of the army. Ki kol tzaon tzaon. Usually, for every victory, there'll have to be a lot of loud noises, and there'll have to be a lot of blood, and a lot of fire. But over here, what would happen is that the enemy would have a plague right outside of Yerushalayim, and they basically would leave on their own. So usually there is a victory with noise and fire and blood, but this would just be like we wouldn't have to do the work. It's interesting, we're going to see later that this victory was, the king at that time was Chizkiyahu. He wasn't yet born. It was a slow process of this power, Assyria, of their dominion over Eretz Yisrael. They had sent the 10 tribes into exile, and they started levying taxes and started, usually before they wipe out a country, they see if they can make it subservient. They make the people work for them, they abuse them, they assert their power over them. And so over here, they would burn with, like, he's describing them burning as if with a fire. Now, which leader would it be that would lead us out? So he refers here to the birth of Chizkiyahu, who was not born yet, who's going to be the next king. Ki yelid yulad lanu. I'm sorry, he was born already, but he wasn't yet king already. He was like a youngster. Ki yelid yulad lanu, verse 5. Nitin lanu, a child has been born to us. Fatia Mishra Ashikmo, and he will have the authority on his shoulders. He'll be able to take the responsibility. Vayikra Shmo, and his name will be called. Now, this is referring to Chizkiyahu. Again, for some reason, the Christians like this verse, so they decided it referred to the birth of their guy, even though it was like 100 years later, it had no connection, and that guy was never called these names. But they decided retroactively that they liked it. But this refers to Chizkiyahu, who was the king who succeeded in defeating Sancheirus. Now, in a certain way, you might say, what do you mean he defeated Sancheirus? Sancheirus basically died made a siege, and there was a plague. And all he did was he was inside the city. He didn't show much leadership. But we have a tradition that Chizkiyahu went on an education campaign. He was known amongst all the kings for making sure that the people understood Torah and having universal education. It says that during his time, even the little children knew all of the laws, all of the dinim of the Torah. It really goes back to Chizkiyo. The Medrash says that he put up a sword in front of the study hall. That until then, if you wanted to go study, it was optional. But he put a sword up as if to say, it's not optional. If you don't study, this is what you're going to get. And it doesn't say that he ever actually killed anybody, but Chizkiyo was one of the most righteous kings that ever existed. Chazal say he almost was the Mashiach, that when this miracle happened, when Sancheirav was destroyed at the footsteps of Yerushalayim, if we had utilized that moment, he could have been the Mashiach. In other words, he could have rebuilt, the temple was still standing, but he could have, there could have been an awakening amongst the Jewish people that would have been done in such a way that we would have never had to go into exile. But it didn't happen. There are moments in history, sometimes you get a victory and you don't know what to do with the victory. And so, in a certain way, that's what happened. They were to get this victory, but they didn't utilize it. One of the things the rabbis point out, like, what did he do wrong? But he didn't sing Shira. After we left Egypt, that Moshe Rabbeinu, it says that he sang Shira. He sang a song of thanks. And after we defeated our enemies, Devorah, she said a song of Shira. There's an idea that when a person's had something happen to them, when Hashem has been kind to them, they have to live with that realization. They have to be a changed person. They can't just go back to life as usual. And somehow he didn't, it's such a funny thing, you know, he's one of the top most righteous people who ever existed, and what are we doing? We're sitting and talking about his fault. Why he wasn't Mashiach. Why wasn't he the greatest person who ever lived? Well, he had to, on some level, he didn't have that. After the miracle, they didn't utilize it in a way that they could have. They were just, they could have sang Shira, they could have been so thankful, and somehow they just, it seems like he was just tired, because they lived through a famine and a siege, and it was like, phew, let's go to bed. Or just whatever. They didn't. Sometimes a person, when they have a miracle happen to them, and they're just, the Medrash just says that he just didn't feel he had the strength to carry the people after that. It was very difficult. There were months of siege and famine, and there was this strife because there were different parties that went over to the enemy, even within the royal household, and it was a very difficult time. But after it was done, had he utilized it properly, something could have happened. Many people talk about the Six-Day War, that it was an unbelievable miracle, meaning that before the war happened, people were afraid for the worst. People that lived through that time, they looked at it like it might be a second Holocaust. All the nations were talking about, they were making plans already about throwing the Jews into the sea. And they were talking about how they were going to they were going to be in Yerushalayim, and they had conquered Tel Aviv. And in the beginning of the war, they lied. On the radio, they said, oh, our troops are in Tel Aviv, and our planes have bombed out the Israeli. And it was actually the exact opposite. But in those, at that time, people lived in a great fear. And then, it's one of the Six-Day War today is, you know, how long are we in Afghanistan? 10 years? How long were we in Iraq? You know, they don't make wars like they used to, you know, 6 days. But it was like such an unbelievable thing. Here was tiny Israel, and all, instead of losing the battle, they multiplied. You know, we got Yerushalayim back. It was such an incredible miracle in so many ways. They used to have to worry about the Golan Heights, where the Syrians would throw shells over them, and they were able to scale the heights and defeated the Syrians, and they defeated the Egyptians, and it was and they got the old city back, and all of that was true, and people felt special. There were people that became more observant at that time because they felt, wow, look what Hashem did for it. The Jews in Russia. There was a movement in Russia to leave Russia, even when it was dangerous to do so. They said the catalyst for that was the Six-Day War. But somehow that happened, and it was happy and it was good, but we never utilized it. Then we went back to business as normal. But people felt that it could have been a moment. In other words, if we had known exactly how to use it, It could have been, a major thing, but somehow we had the miracle, that was why the Yom Kippur War was very sad a few years later, because it was like, here we go again, we accomplished nothing. This idea that you have to use the moment, if you have the ability, if you have something to happen, use it in a special way. There are people that use a tragedy. When a tragedy happens, they try to use the tragedy. But you have to when things are good, you have to use the moment also. That's really the lesson. But on some level, he was faulted for not being able to do that. I don't want to really focus on the fault. Let's focus on his greatness. In this next verse, we're going to describe what his greatness was. This is Chizkiyo.
So, what's this whole paragraph about?
It's about the falling of the superpower Assyria that was going to that had been causing a lot of harm. They had sent the 10 tribes into exile, and they were on the way to destroying Yehuda also.
It's not a future prophecy; it's current or past.
Well, their downfall would be in the future. In other words, right now people were in darkness and doom, and they figured that all was lost because there's no way we'll ever defeat him. And they're predicting that someone who was born already will be the leader that will help us overcome him, and we'll see a great miracle.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What should we have done after the 67
years? I wish I was a prophet. there could have been basically, there's a large part of the Jewish population that's unaffiliated and not connected and not that's fallen to the wayside. And perhaps they could have, at that time, maybe, things were strengthened, or who knows who the leadership would have, things in Israel could have been different. But it was an opportunity. And historically, nothing special. It was a great victory, but it wasn't, it didn't lead to a, it didn't lead to a huge strengthening of our Judaism and a huge strengthening of our synagogues. It didn't lead to a movement back to Israel. It didn't. In some ways, it did. But people really thought. I'll tell you how far they thought. There were a group of rabbis that made a prayer that this is it. Redemption began. They said, and Rabbi Emanuel refused to allow that prayer in Beth Jacob, which very wisely so. But and some people say that's why the Young Israel started many years later. But the problem with the prayer was the people, when they had that victory, they said, that's it, the Mashiach is here, we're done. And the prayer says that the state of Israel is the beginning of redemption. That's it, like, because it was such a miracle. But most of those people, the more honest ones, admit that they made a big mistake when they wrote the prayer, because the redemption, this was a long time, at 67, and it's still not here. We got to work for it. We still got the trouble in Gaza, and we got trouble in Syria, and we got trouble in Lebanon. Redemption is not here yet. But people thought it was. And with redemption comes certain obligations. Certain things have to happen. We'll describe, though, the leader that did succeed in overcoming the enemy. Again, the fact that he didn't become the Mashiach, there's only going to be one Mashiach, so it's okay. Like, you're not the top, so you're second best. But this is how it describes him. So the first is he carries the mantle. Like, he wears the... he takes responsibility. There's too many people, they blame their predecessor. It's all George Bush's fault. It's all this one's fault. The real leader is going to carry the... wear the robe. He's going to carry the responsibility. Ulushalom ein keitz. And he's going to be a person of peace. Unlimited peace. He's going to... We've always had factionalism, where people fight with each other, they argue with each other, there's division. He's going to bring the parties together. This is why, the idea that the Mashiach came already is a joke. What do you mean? The Mashiach's going to bring peace. The world's been at war for how many generations? How many, the 100 years war, and the World War One, what do you mean the Mashiach came already? If he was here, the Mashiach is the Prince of Peace. Peace means the lion lies down with the lamb. That ain't happened. Even there were some Hasidic groups who thought the Rebbe was the Mashiach. That's not a Jewish idea. Mashiach brings peace. There's no peace in the world. That's ridiculous. That's not our Mashiach. Our Mashiach says that he's going to be a Prince of Peace, unlimited. We don't have unlimited peace. There were people that thought, by the way, after World War I, that they'd make the United Nations, there would be peace. The war to end all wars, remember that? You know, or once we had nuclear power, there would be no more war, and the world would be a better place. Now we're a little more, maybe a little more humbled, or a little more... we still believe, though, at some point, mankind will get it right. At some point, and with the right leadership, that there has to... I mean, think about it this way. I don't know if it's a good example totally, but Europe, that was one continuous war for 1,000 years, now is somewhat united, even though it's not working financially. You know, the European Union. You know, like the Germans and the French and they used to butcher each other. Every 10 years, there'd be another war. Every 20 years, there was another war, and they gave the EU the Peace Prize, and really because because there was constant war. And but now we look at it and they say, well, why should there be a war? Well, guess what? There shouldn't have been a war all those years either. People have to learn to get along with each other. You know, so he describes here, though, that he'll be a leader who has authority and works on unlimited peace, works on helping people get along. So Akisei David, he's going to sit on the throne of David. Now, again, Yashka never sat on the throne of David. It's so silly. Like, you know, just... The verse, this is talking about somebody from the Davidic line who would be this great leader. Ba'amam lachto and his kingship. Lahachin oso l'sada. And he's going to support it. Now, where does the authority come from to be king? B'mishpat u'b'tzdaka. There'll be justice and there'll be righteousness. Justice sometimes the poor person can be wrong. You know, sometimes the poor person has no right to sue. But that doesn't mean he's not poor. So first there has to be justice, and then you can help the people that are poor. You can give tzedakah, but the justice can't be perverted. Me'ata ve'ad olam. And kines Hashem svakos tasezos, and Hashem will, in his zealousness, he will accomplish this. Okay. Adavar shalach Hashem be'Yakov. Now 7. Now we go back again to what was going to happen at this time. Now. So he was referring to the new king that was going to be born in Yehuda, and he was referring to the destruction of the superpower. Now, we're still earlier, we're going back to Yeshayahu's time, and the two other powers at his time were the 10 tribes and the Aram. So it says, Davar Shalach Hashem, basically we're going to see with Syria. Assyria is Iraq, by the way. In other words, it was the nation from afar that was the superpower that was going to knock off it was going to knock off Syria and knock off the 10 tribes. Davar Shalach Hashem b'Yaakov, enough of Israel. And Hashem is going to send a word against Yaakov. Here he's talking here about the 10 tribes. And this is a tragedy. The Jewish people has never been whole since this time. And the 10 tribes did go lost. And he's going to describe here what happened. Verse 8, V'yadu am kulu, and the people will know. Ephraim the Yoshev Shomron. What happened to Ephraim? Ephraim, you know, in their prayers we talk about him being the special child, the unique child. The Yosef was Yaakov's favorite. He was the most, you know, he was smart, he was handsome, he was wise. And what happens to smart, handsome, and wise people? So sometimes...
let me tell you that.
Okay, all right. Thank you. So, all right, so what happens? So let me tell you. So sometimes they accomplish what they need to, and then sometimes it goes to their heads.
They become
Jehu. right. But they go begaiva with arrogance, with the gutter levav, and the haughtiness of their heart, and they it goes to their head. Verse 9, and this is what happened to Ephraim. Now, they should have gotten the message that their kings had fallen, their leaders had fallen. They should have gotten the message that if they didn't do teshuvah, they were next. But instead of getting the message, this is what they said. Levenim naflu. You know what? If the bricks fell, ugazis nimna, we'll build it up stronger next time. Shikumim gadu. You know, the trees, the sycamore trees fell. You know what? Barazim nachlif, we'll put cedar in. Basically, if we didn't do it last time, that's because our leaders weren't strong enough, but we'll rebuild it even better. But they refused to look at the idea that Hashem was angry with them for their actions. It's almost like, well, Holocaust, never again. But they didn't say, in other words, we can fix the problem, but we're not going to deal with whether Hashem caused it or if he's angry with us or if he wants us to do something. No, if this brick fell down, we'll build it up later. Well, last time we didn't speak up enough. But if we speak up enough, then it would be... I was reading somebody was saying... I don't know why. The Jewish Times, somebody wrote in, well, if the people in Europe had guns, there wouldn't have been a Holocaust.
Had what?
Guns. There was some article about gun control there about it. Somebody wrote it in Georgia, had an article about it. That's always a southern topic. But the idea is that it's a certain, to some extent, if you just say, well, if only this, the problem wouldn't have been there, you're not dealing with the issue. And the people weren't dealing with the issue. They said, well, if our leader was a sycamore, so let's get a cedar leader. Let's get a stronger leader. If we use the wrong kind of wood, we'll rebuild it with a stronger kind of wood. But the reason why their country fell was because Hashem wasn't happy with them. Verse 10, but Yiskav Hashem es sari v'tzino lav es oda v'yisafu. And Hashem will strengthen the enemies against them, and Hashem brought those enemies against them, and they would not be able to rebuild. He's talking here about the 10 tribes. Aram Mikedem, the enemies he would bring would be Aram and the Plishtim. Those Philistines, the Plishtim, the Palestinians, they've always been around. The Yochel is Yisrael, and they would eat up Yisrael, the Kolta, with every mouth. With every chance they could to harm us, they would. Interesting, they talk about their mouths. It doesn't mean that they would use propaganda. I don't know. The Kolzos lo shavapo, and Hashem's anger. Now, Hashem punished us a lot, so maybe that's enough. But that didn't satisfy Hashem's anger. Ad yadin to you, and his hand was outstretched against them. For several hundred years, we had the kingdom of the 10 tribes, and it was an opportunity to... show what a Jewish kingdom could be, and it only angered Hashem. They never, the kingdom of Ephraim, never really reached its potential. Verse 12, Am lo shav ad makeu. The people didn't turn back, even under once they were smitten. Ves Hashem sfachos lo doshu, and they didn't seek out Hashem. That's supposed to be our react when things are bad, when things happen. People have to come back to Hashem and they have to improve their ways, and that didn't happen here. Verse 13, Vayakris Hashem Yisrael Rosh Hashanah, and Hashem's going to cut off the head and the tail, Kippa Va'agmam, the hump and the small, Yom Echad, and one day he's going to the destruction of the 10 tribes would be like cutting off the head and the tail, the good and the bad, the top, the leaders and the poor people. It would be a little bit of everything. Zakim, it would be from the elders, Nosei Panim, Harosh, Venavi, Umor, Shekuhu, Azanam. The good ones would be the elders and the heads, and the bad ones would be the false prophets. It would be one fell swoop, it would be both. 15, Vehiu, Ma'ashre, Amazeth. And it was the leader's fault, the leaders of the 10 tribes, because they from the word ta means like he confused them, he led them along the wrong way, and the people also were misled. So it was really just the 10 tribes was really a disaster, really. There's no other way to explain it. Until this day, we don't know what happened to them, the 10 tribes. The people of Israel are not a whole people. There's an idea that the 10 tribes are mixed up amongst the nations of the world. Some people say that's who the converts are, that they're descendants of the 10 tribes. There's another idea that they're lost behind in somewhere in Africa, behind the mountains, or some, you know, that they may come back. And there are tribes of people that have Jewish descent who have come back, many of them to the land of Israel, but certainly not the 10 tribes as we know them. Verse 16, So the pattern that Jews have disappeared, or it's a pattern of history. Al kain abachur lo yismach Hashem, and therefore the youth can't rejoice. Vesisoma vesanos lo yirachin. Usually Hashem at least takes pity on the widows and the orphans. Here Hashem would not take pity. Now the men would be the first ones to go because they would be defeated in battle, and at home would be the orphans and the widows. But Hashem didn't take pity on them either. Because the city was full of hypocrisy. And people spoke disgusting things. Things that people talked, that they said. And Hashem still wasn't finished. So it's like we're going through warning after warning of what's going to happen. And Hashem, again, when Hashem's anger is there, if the people had returned to Hashem and had straightened out their ways, then his hand would come back. But his outstretched arm is like his arm is stretched out against us. And so here, even after the people have been cut down, so to speak, and the widows and the orphans, Hashem hasn't pulled back his arm. Why is that? Kibara ke'esh rasha. Because wickedness burned like a fire. Fire spreads like very easy. Wickedness was like that. Shamei v'shes tocho, and it eats away. V'titzas v'socha yar. We have a fire in a forest. If you've ever seen those forest fires, they move very fast. That's why they're so dangerous. Like out west, they had these big fires, and they sometimes jump over roads and like that. The power of these huge fires to spread. So the wickedness, it somehow spread like that. The evil ways. The Yafgu Geus Ashen, and people became entangled in the smoke. 18. Be'evres Hashem spoke with Natama Oretz, and Hashem's wrath eventually would destroy the land. Ve'yam kamo cheloseish, and the people would be what's left after fire. Ish el achiv lo yechman, people didn't take pity on one another. Even at that time, when Hashem was coming against them, if they had banded together and showed concern for one another and helped each other in that difficult time, then maybe that Hashem would have taken pity on them. But instead, when things got difficult, they fought amongst each other, and so that kind of sealed their doom. What's nice about this Hurricane Sandy is you hear all the nice stories. I mean, there are a few stories of price gouging and things like that, but there are a lot of people that when the chips are down, they try to help each other. There are a lot of people that we like to think so. I hope it's true that I believe so. In other words, I think that there are people that deep down have compassion, and if they see times are rough, they do try to help others. And you read a lot of stories of that. But that's what would have been the ideal thing over here. Verse 18 that we're saying is that a person should have, in those difficult times where the fire was burning, they should have pitied each other. And instead, let's see what happens. Yigzal yamin v'rav v'yochel. They steal from each other. Al smol v'lo seveu ish b'ser zer. And it's like they're eating their own flesh. When people steal from each other and they fight with each other, they're eating. It's like a person eating the flesh of their arm, because people have to help each other, and they accomplish nothing by taking away from each other. Verse 20, Menashe is Ephraim, here the two brothers, they're fighting. Menashe is fighting, Ephraim is fighting Menashe, Menashe Yaktav, Hemu, Al Yehuda, and they're fighting against Yehuda. So the anger of Hashem didn't unite them, it didn't cause teshuvah. It just caused them to take from each other. The kozos lo shavapo, and with Hashem's anger, it wasn't enough. And his arm was still against them. So it's describing very difficult times that the people were living through, and describing the hand of Hashem being against them through one thing after another. And so this is interesting how, you have the good news and the bad news. It's I don't know if it was all said together, but it's all certainly combined in this one chapter. But there's the idea that Hashem sends people messages, and in the ideal world, if we react in the right way, then the arm that's stretched against us will be pulled back, and so to speak. And so, that's why there's always this idea when somebody has, nobody should have something happen to them, but they try to see if there's something that they need fixing, if there's something we can mend. That's a Jewish reaction. When there's something happens, is there something I need to fix? Is there something wrong that I need to... Now, sometimes a person looks and there's nothing they need to do. That's fine, But the first person's first reaction is if... it appears like Hashem is angry with us. Oh, you know what? Maybe I need to fix something. Maybe there's something I can do. Maybe Hashem is angry with me for some reason, or maybe I'm not doing what I'm supposed to. Now, sometimes a person looks and he's doing everything he's supposed to be doing. But that should be a person's It's almost like when something goes wrong, first check and see if it's something that you caused. If it's not your fault, there's nothing you can do. But if you're the one who's causing, you know, everything, you know, first check and make sure it's not coming from you. It's not nothing it's introspection. That's what we look. In other words, we try to look at ourselves and see, you know, maybe I can fix something, maybe I can do better. And it doesn't mean that there might be other sources, but really that's what life is about. Life is about being introspective. We always think, can we do better? Can we do more? That's really that's always what we want to focus on. Is there something we can do to improve?
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.